Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome back to Author Talk. Today we are pleased to have with us renowned author, Denise Turney. And she has a very extensive history in publishing. And she's also a Blog Talk host. We want to welcome Denise to the show today.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, Denise.
How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. I want
to
thank you for having me
on the show.
It's an honor to be here. So thank you very much for inviting me on the show. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, I'm happy to have you. I was reading your bio, and I'm very impressed. You wrote some really impressive books. But today you put you picked your one book, and you're going to read it for us. But, Denise, out of your history, what is one thing that remains in your mind, something that you always go back and remember?
A couple of things. I was just actually thinking about this yesterday, and that's such a good question. I was thinking about what really triggered my belief that my dreams could come true, and it actually came through my father. He used to race cars, and watching him, and that's something I've told myself to do for my son and other people who people are always watching you. My dad used to drag races, a white Austin Healey, at an HRA strip not too far outside of Dayton, Ohio. And just watching him do what he loved and going after what he wanted to do. I can remember, I must not have been probably around five or six years old, a little kid. He would take us out on the strip with him, and we'd plug in our ears while he raced, and he always won. But I can remember watching him and believing as a kid that my dreams could come true, too. Just watching my dad do that. He never spoke about it. He never told me, you know, see what I'm doing, you can go after your dreams too. It was just something that happened organically. That's one thing that stays in my mind. And then how after years of reading, I was a voracious reader. I was like Matilda in the movie Matilda. If you saw that movie, I mean, I read a lot of books. And I can remember after reading all these books, my sister Adrian came home from, we were going to Flanagan Elementary, and she dropped this book off on the bed. And the school we were going to at the time, and I'm going back to the 70s, you didn't see a lot of African-American books back then. And it was by Gwendolyn Brooks, who since passed, but she was a poet out of Chicago. Those characters, this is after reading all these books, these characters she wrote about in her poems came to life for me, and that's when I realized that I was a writer. Those things will stick out in my mind probably forever.
Excellent choice, Gwendolyn Brooks, and your father inspiring you.
Yes.
Okay, and you did a lot of traveling, you know, reading people and meeting readers. What place, you know, in all your travels, you've been to Spelman College and a couple of other places. Which place were you in awe of with the readers? Which place really was like, oh my, I can't believe I actually made it here?
It would probably be Spelman, Emory University, and also when I spoke at Merrill Lynch. Actually, all three of them, because they're renowned. You know, Merrill Lynch as a company, and then also Emory University. Anybody who's keeps up with things in the post-secondary arena knows Emory is a top school. The same for Spelman, and I mean Spelman. You'd have to go to Spelman to really get the feel for the level of school that is. I actually have a friend down there who's an administrator. She used to be an English professor at Spelman. We're talking, I mean, these kids are so bright. It's almost scary. You're like, oh, my goodness. If you go to an average school and you are an exceptional student, you go to Spelman and you feel like a dope. These kids are very, very bright. So those those Spelman, Emory University, and Merrill Lynch, I was just, I can't believe I'm here, particularly at Emory, because we were in a large auditorium. At Spelman, it was more of a private setting. I was speaking with the English students and some other students who were taking advanced courses. So that was more of a, I want to say no more than 20 people, but Emory was a huge auditorium, and so Merrill Lynch was a huge audience as well, was for Take Our Daughters to Work Day. But those stick out in my mind, like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe I'm here.
Okay. Like I said, I was reading your bio and trying to get to know you as an author and as a person. Denise, like I said, you got a very varied history. Now, of all your books you wrote, which one is your favorite?
Oh, my goodness. I have to, well, I'll say yes, the favorite is the one generally that I just recently finished. Portia is probably stands out to a lot of readers. It was my first book to hit the market in 1998. But people have told me, including book club presidents, people who read a lot and support authors a lot, that it's really a classic because there's no other book like it. There are books you can read about women from other cultural, racial backgrounds who are dealing with breast cancer, but Portia, and it's written sort of like in a memoir format. People tell me that they've never come across another book like it. So Portia, for that reason, the way people received it and what readers think of it and how people have come up to me and tell me that they've shared it with others who are going through that and the impact it had on them. So Portia stands out to me for that reason. But generally, it's the book that I currently, my latest book, that's the one that I'm marketing the most, although I continue to market all my books, and I would advise any writer to do that. But it's the latest book that literally gets the most mileage right now.
Okay. All right. And tonight we're privileged. You're going to read for us from one of your books.
Mm-hmm.
And I read the reviews from the book, and your reviews are excellent, and I love how your readers described your books, and I love the word when they say complex. That immediately gets my attention because that means that you developed your characters so well that you drew the readers into your story.
Mm. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I will say this. I think characters, if anybody who is either an author, an editor, or a book reviewer, or you read a lot, and particularly when you read a lot of different novels and you get the authors, we all have our own voice, our own style, and that's one of the first things they teach you when you are a writer is to develop your own voice. That's what's going to attract the reader in your own style when they read your future work. They almost don't even need to see your title. They just know. You see it with singers as well. You just hear this style and you know, that's Aretha Franklin or that's Whitney Houston. You just know the style that the person has. It just stands out, and they tell you as a writer, that's a good, you want your own signature. You want your own voice. You want your own style. But beyond that, I find that readers need to care about your characters. You can see this even in movies where there's a lot of action scenes and there's a lot going on, and you're excited. It's just so, I mean, whether it's a lot of explosion scenes or the romance scenes, but if you don't care about the characters, if they're not well developed, it's almost like as soon as you walk out of a theater, it's over. But if you take something where the characters are very, very well developed, that story stays with you. And this story, the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, just popped into my head. There's not like a lot of action and whatnot going on there, but that character is so strong that she stays with you. So I've always wanted to develop characters that the readers would care about. They want to know what's going to happen to them. They're pulling for some characters. And I've written, like Love Has Many Faces, I've developed characters that really was shocking to me that readers hated that character. I mean, a strong, passionate dislike. I was like, whoa, that happens as well, where they really want to see that character suffer. They just don't like that character. Mm. So readers, I think, sometimes live a little voraciously through a story as well, because they can get very connected to characters.
This is very true. Okay, Ms. Turner, can you please read an excerpt from your wonderful book for us?
Oh, well, thank you. This is actually an excerpt from my latest novel, Love Pour Over Me. And just to give your listeners here at Off the Talk a little bit of background on Love Pour Over Me, it's a story about Raymond Clark. He's an academic. He's an academic standout, and he is top notch in track and field. His mother has she left the family when he was a young boy, and she left him in the care of a father who, you have to read the whole novel to watch how these characters develop. At the beginning of Love Pour Over Me, I can tell you a lot of readers, they hate, again, people feel very passionate about these characters. They hate the father. I mean, they've called him cuss words. I've had readers tell me I hate that bleep bleep. But he develops as time goes on. So the mother's left him in this man's care. But when she leaves him, he's not as badly off as he becomes during Raymond's childhood. So I'm going to start with this is my first excerpt, chapter one. It was Friday afternoon, June 15, 1984. Raymond Clark lay across his bed. An empty bowl of popcorn was on the floor. Snacking did little to ease his excitement. In less than 3 hours, his year-round efforts to prove himself deserving of unwavering acclaim would be validated in front of hundreds of his classmates. Tonight was his high school graduation, the day he had dreamed about for weeks. He knew his grades were high enough to earn him academic honors. Even more than his grades were his athletic achievements. He hadn't been beaten in a track race in 3 years. He won a state half mile and mile runs for the last 6 years since he was in middle school. People would cheer wildly for him tonight. The television was turned up loud. Carl Lewis threatens to break Bob Beamon's historic long jump record at the Olympic trials in Los Angeles this weekend. An ESPN sportscaster announced Beamon's record has stood for 16 years. Lewis, Raymond got so caught up in the mention of the upcoming Olympic Games that he didn't hear the front door open. Ray, his father Malcolm shouted as soon as he entered the house. What? Raymond leaped off his bed and hurried into the living room. Dad, what? Boy, if you don't get your... Raymond watched his father wave his hand over the sofa, the place where he'd thrown his sports bag as soon as he got home from his graduation practice at school. Get this sports crap up, Malcolm growled. Silence filled the house. Raymond grabbed his sports bag, carried it into his bedroom, and tossed it across his bed. His father exited the living room and entered the kitchen. Like a dark shadow, frustration from spending 10 hours working at a drab automobile plant where he drilled leather seats into one Ford Mustang after another while his line supervisor stood at his shoulder and barked, "Focus, Malcolm. Get your production up." Followed him there. It was in the furrow of his brow and in the pinch of his lip. "Ray!" Raymond cursed beneath his breath before he left his bedroom and hurried into the living room. Seconds later, he stood in the kitchen's open doorway. He watched his father toss an envelope on the table. Letter from Baker came in the mail. Something about you getting some awards when he reached to the center of the kitchen table for a bottle of Still Favor. He stopped hiding the alcohol when Raymond turned 5. The alcohol looks like liquid gold. Felt that way to Malcolm, too. You graduate tonight. Malcolm took a long swig of the whiskey and squinted against the burn. He tried to laugh but only coughed up spleen. You're probably the only kid in that whole school who got a letter like this. Everybody up at Baker knows nobody cares about you. Letter said they thought I'd want to let all your relatives know. You're getting some awards so they come out and support you. Again, Malcolm worked at laughter but instead coughed a dry, scratchy cough that went long and raw through his throat. We both know ain't nobody going to be there but me and your sorry. And me, but you're sorry behind. I got to scroll down to my next page. Sorry about that.
It's okay. It's quite all right.
don't mean nothing anyhow. They're just giving these diplomas and awards away nowadays. On his way out of the kitchen, bottle in hand, he shoved the ladder against Raymond's chest. Raymond listened to his father's footsteps go heavy up the back stairs while he stood alone in the kitchen. When the footsteps became a whisper, he looked down the ladder. It was printed on good stationery, the kind Baker High School only used for special occasions. Didn't matter, though. Raymond took the ladder and ripped it once, twice, three times, over and over again, until it was only shreds of paper. Then he walked to the tall kitchen wastebasket next to the gas stove and dropped the bits inside. Ray, he froze from the sound of his father's voice. He knew he was at the top of the stairs. Give me that ladder so I remember to go to your graduation tonight. It was 8 o'clock. Raymond told himself not to, but he turned partway and glanced over his shoulder. It was as if he'd suddenly been plagued with dementia because he forgot the years of abuse heaped upon him with Malcolm's callous hands. He wanted Malcolm to walk through the convention center doors sober and real proud-like. He wanted Malcolm to be glad to call him his son. To the students, as I call out your name, please stand and make your way onto the stage. Principal Jones flipped through a stack of staple papers, then he pushed his mouth close to the microphone and said slowly, Sharon Appleseed, a loud round of applause, whistling, and way to go, Pierce said. It went on like that for more than an hour until all but two students had received a diploma, Raymond and Janice Thompson, a bright 16-year-old who sat in a wheelchair due to spina bifida. And I'm going to read, go down a little bit. Janice pushed the wheelchair toward the stage, and everyone stood and applauded wildly. Amid the swell of noise and the sea of people, Raymond looked over his shoulder and searched every face for Malcolm. His gaze darted in a crazed fashion. Then he felt a tap on his shoulder. It was his friend Paul. They sat next to each other. Yo, man, is your pops coming? Raymond turned away from Paul, faced the stage, and stood tall, head up, shoulders back. When Paul tapped him again, he jerked his shoulders hard and shrugged him off. The auditorium grew quiet. And now it's time for us to bestow the top honor, Principal Jones smiled before he said. This young man has earned high commendations academically and athletically. In short intervals, Paul, several members of the track team, and Raymond's high school track coach turned and looked to the back of the auditorium toward the entrance doors. They prayed for Malcolm to show. Oh, Paul muttered when he turned around and faced the stage for the eighth time. He bumped shoulders with the guy who's next to him. That bleep ain't coming. He lowered his head and his voice. Ray's pops ain't coming. The young man has earned all city, all country, all state, and top honors in cross country and track and field. In fact, twice he's been listed as a top high school mile in the country by Sports Illustrated and Track and Field News. He has earned 4 presidential academic citations. He's been on the honor roll since the 7th grade. Principal Jones scans the auditorium for Malcolm. When he didn't see him, he spoke slower and started to make up things in the hopes that time will become Raymond's friend. And I'm going down a little bit more. Ladies and gentlemen, please congratulate Baker High School's class of 1984 valedictorian Raymond Clark. Paul clapped into his hand stung. A few students stood in their seats and hollered out, Go Ray! Before long, a chant went up. All the students pumped their fists in the air and shouted, Raymond! Raymond! Raymond's heart beat wildly in his chest. He clamped his teeth down against his bottom lip and gelled the rising emotion. He extended his hand when he neared Principal Jones' side. Well done, Principal Jones told him as he handed him his diploma. He patted Raymond's back. You did a fine job, son. He shook his head. A fine job. The chain lock was on the front door when Raymond got home that night. He jiggled the chain and tried to get it to slide open. When that didn't work, he walked to the back of the house and tried to open the rear door, the one leading to the backyard. He cursed as he realized the chain lock was on the back door as well. Then he looked for an opening. He was in luck. The kitchen window was ajar just enough to allow him entry. He grunted and pushed up. The screen didn't even bang when it landed in the sink. He crawled through the window like a thief. When he reached the stairs, he saw a flicker of light coming from the second floor. Dad, he called out softly, then louder as he made his way up the stairs. Dad! A newly pressed blue striped suit hung across the chair in the corner of his father's bedroom. The television was turned down so low, it sounded like it was humming. Dad! The bed was empty, covers bunched together near the foot. The shade to the room's one lamp was tilted as if someone had punched it. Dad! Raymond walked across the hall. He started to scream, Dad! He ran back down the stairs. Dad, he screamed as he made his way through the house. He saw the shadow, curled and bent like an old man at his bed's edge. Silence was his escort into his own room. Malcolm stood slowly, his body leaned right. from his shoulders to his ankles. His hands were clenched. His eyes were slits. "Why didn't you tell me?" he demanded. His hands in his arms and legs quaked. He took heavy Frankenstein-like steps toward Raymond. "Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you tell me?" When no more than a few inches separated them, Raymond saw the red in his father's eyes. Malcolm stepped forward again, and this time Raymond stepped back, prepared to duck. "Tell you what," he stammered. Fear had gone into his body. He felt like instead of blood, electricity was coursing through his veins. "Why didn't you tell me?" What, Dad?" Raymond screamed. "Tell you what?" And I'll stop there.
I love that. I love your character development.
Well, thank you.
I really do. You drew me in with Raymond. I mean, I could feel what he was going through. I could visualize the scene. So it was.
You know, women.
All right. Okay. Do we have any callers that want to talk with Ms. Turney tonight? If so, push 1 on your phone. Okay. Nobody wants. I guess they just want to listen. Which a lot of my people do that. They just call and listen to the authors read. I got to read that book because Raymond, and like you said, your characters do. I can see why your readers are hooked on your characters.
Raymond had
a really tumultuous life, huh?
Yeah, and that's just a tip of what he goes through. Actually, my son read it, and he's like, something happens to Raymond in this book that upset my son to the point where he said, "I'm not reading anymore." But he finished it anyway. He said, "That's it. I'm done." But he kept going. And people have asked me, you know, why you put your characters through so much, but people hated the father. I actually, in the end, loved him. But some people told me they never did get there with the father. It's just the start. And then I also explain how the father got to be the way he is. We all start off as innocent kids, and we become the way we are based on our experiences and our perceptions of what's happening to us. So, but the ending, you'll see them all develop and evolve. The way these characters are at the start of the story, they're very different at the end.
It's true. It's like you say, they all start out innocent, and then life happens, and then they change.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So now do you have something coming? New?
I am actually working on a new novel, you know. Anybody who's written a book and published a book, they say nonfiction is easier to market than fiction novels. Some people don't even read fiction. They're like, "Oh, it's a waste of time. It's not based on real life." But in a way, it is. You can learn a lot about yourself. I certainly have through the novels I've read. And you can also learn some tips and advice on things you see characters do that doesn't work. Or this would work. I just find novels, they're very, to me, therapeutic, and you can learn a lot about real life while your defenses are down while you're reading a novel and you're watching these different characters work their way through hard things or do happy things and see how it impacts them and what their decisions turn out to be like. But that said, I am working on a new novel in the midst of my freelance writing and other things that I'm doing. And it's based in the 1940s in Chicago. The working title is God is Glory. She's from Louisiana. She's from the South, and she was actually dating a guy, and the relationship broke off. Her mother has a history of being in poor relationships with men, and God has picked some of that up. So she goes, anyway, she takes a train to Chicago thinking that this guy wants to, you know, get them to get back together. But she gets into Chicago, that doesn't happen, but she does run into, she doesn't have enough money to catch the train back home to Louisiana. Her and her mother have a strained relationship. So she stays in Chicago, and things happened from there. I will tell you that in real life, there have been a few very successful women gangsters. She's not really like a gangster, but she gets involved in it, and she's very successful. And there's some women who have been very successful at that and just walked away completely unscathed. There actually was a show, I don't know if it was on BET or TV1, about a woman who, she came from another country, and she got into the numbers game, and she did very well. And just, you wouldn't think a woman would be doing this during this time. But it's sort of loosely around that as well. She's a classy lady. She's smart. She's got to be sharp. She's in the city by herself at a time when the gangsters, the mobsters were really, really strong in Chicago. I don't know is our connection still? I'm not sure to the listeners. I don't know if the connection. Are we still connected?
Yes,
I just heard silence,
I'm here.
So I wasn't sure. Oh, okay. So I was just telling you. So that was it. Gaida is set in Chicago during the 1940s, and I'm still working on it. I'm not even halfway through it yet.
Oh, yeah, because I know the research alone is going to take you some time.
So,
I know it's going to be an excellent book.
Oh,
I can't wait
you.
To read it. Okay, we got another caller, 310. Do you want to talk to Miss Turney? So, trying to get everybody in before the night over. Does anybody want to talk to Miss Turney? Which one? And we'll bring you into the conversation. Okay, everybody's listening tonight. All right, so you got that on your plan, and I know you do a lot of other things.
Yes,
that keep you really, really busy.
You know, on my radio show, Off the Shelf, I've interviewed a lot of people, as I'm sure you have here at Author Talk. And one thing I often will say, and it surprises me, but doesn't surprise me, the busiest people in the world, they can always take on another project. I don't even know. You hear people who almost don't do anything. Their schedule is nothing like a person who is just the schedule. Some people's schedule is so busy, and then you're like, oh, what are you doing next? And I'm like, and I'm starting my own TV show, and I'm this, and I'm that, and I'm this. And it's like, wow, you've got a full plate. Mm-hmm. And they just keep going. I mean, Tyler Perry just popped into my head. It's like, is this guy ever sleep? Yeah, I do other things, like with my freelance writing and working and marketing my books and continue to write novels and my blog and my radio show and just different things. And then just marketing alone could chew up all your time. But, yes, a full plate.
Okay, Ms. Turney is also on Blog Talk on Off the Shelf, so you can visit her radio show, too. So we're plugging her. I don't just plug my own. I plug everybody's.
Well, I appreciate it.
And what day do you do your show?
I'm on Saturdays. The show kicks off Saturday mornings, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time or New York City time. We actually had Dr. Sonia Banks. She's a co-author of the book Silent Agreements. She gave relationship advice and tips. She's a private practice in two locations, one Jamaica, Queens, and she's a licensed psychotherapist. Mm-hmm. Oh, she was very, very good. She was very good.
Well, that should have been an excellent show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ms. Turney, we love you, and we want to have you back. And before you leave us today, is there one thing that you want to tell our readers today about you?
Well, I hope you go out and get a copy of Love for Over Me. You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, ebook it. In ebook, I think the lowest I've seen was like $3 and something. And then it's in ebook and in print format. So I hope you will get a copy of it. You're not going to know what happens to these characters unless you read the book. And it's a pretty, I'm going to say it's about 300 plus pages. So you'll get your money's worth just to watch the characters develop. There are a lot of some high chase scenes as well, and exciting scenes for people who like that. And there's a mystery in the novel that'll keep you going all the way, almost from the beginning to the end, after Raymond gets to college. If something happens, and then you get to watch that unwind. So I hope you'll go get a copy of Love Poetry and let me know how you enjoy the book. And I want to thank all the listeners, every last one of you, for tuning in to today's show. And I want to thank you for having me on Author Talk.
All right. No problem. Thank you. And, once you visit, I consider you family. So we would love for you, and I know you're busy, on another time when you're free to come on back on the show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I love that.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This is Author Talk, and we'll be back on Monday at 6:30. Everybody have a good evening. And, Ms. Turney, I'll put the link to the show in your box. Everybody
thank you.
Have a good evening. Good
okay.
Night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.